C1 PR. Number 14A.
So, reviewing the text of soul, we could, for instance, ask ourselves now, what are the temptations that come and place us under the stress of circumstances? And so, as we would go through the text in such terms, it might be quite practical to know these arguments which we encounter in soul, and which are really against the integrity of our prayer. See, here in soul we have to keep the integrity of our prayer. Of which prayer? The prayer of mind and the prayer of soul. Now comes the integrity. We are placed under the stress of circumstances. Our sincerity is tested because all sorts of arguments come and want to take us away from that order. What are these various temptations? Well, in the subtone of mind, it is the temptation which says, come and repeat the offense. The offense is defined as an infraction in law, which says, nah, come along. Why should you pray the prayer of Mrs. Eddy? Pray just something else. Pray the prayer of any church or religious thing which says, oh, just pray to God Almighty, and if you pray nicely and lovingly, He will forgive you everything. And so it is which comes in as a temptation to repeat the offense. Really, the only offense is the offense against God. There is no other offense, really. The big offense is the offense against God, and so we are always in the offending God if we don't accept God as He is, and if we don't worship God as He is, then we are offending God. And so in the subtone of spirit, she says, the temptation that comes is that something says to us, there will be no spiritual growth and no unfoldment and no progress. All what you will earn from the world is ingratitude and persecution. So don't go on. Don't go on. A very subtle question. Then in the third, there is the temptation which says, well, there is another way for counseling sin than through destruction. There are substitutes like confession. There are substitutes for counseling sin through destructions. Very subtle, because soul says there is only one way to get rid of sin, and that is to destroy sin. Then in principle the temptation is that it says, it's quite enough that you ask pardon. That's what you are asked to do in your prayer, just to ask pardon. And then it will be forgiven. Whereas soul says, I'm sinless. And therefore, if we want to have God in His sinlessness, we have to work in a sinless way. The fifth temptation that is shown here in the subtone of life is that we just should seek God's mercy as a method of forgiving sins. That all that is necessary is just to seek mercy. Oh God, be merciful with me. That's a temptation. Because God is always what He is. And therefore we can always take God as He is. And so what is demanded of us is that we leave our false sense of life. That we lay down our false sense of life, then we have life, which is always merciful. And so in truth, the temptation is of trying to destroy sin, sickness, and death without relinquishing sin. That we ask for health and pray for health without being willing to destroy sin. That's the temptation. Says, no, Jesus first rebuked sin and then He cast the sickness out. And the last temptation which is shown in the subtone of love is that it is quite enough to have elevation of thought instead of resurrection, of Christian sentiment resurrection. It's very easy to have elevation of thought. Give me a lift up. And after an hour comes the fall down. Whereas resurrection, as Mrs. Eddy understands, is a permanent, definite, irrevocable resurrection. A resurrection which is not just an elevation of thought, but a resurrection which is the outcome of the first and second big prayer. That really gives us a resurrection which stays with us, which remains with us, which is permanent with us. It may only be a little bit of resurrection, but keeping it constant. Whereas an elevation of thought, we may go right up into the clouds, but it is only a momentary elevation of thought and not a constant. Yes. Now, we could ask ourselves the same question in the positive and say, what does this first subject tell us then, what makes a Christian? Instead of asking, what are the temptations which want to keep us away from demonstrating a Christian sentiment? What means sinlessness and Christ's selfhood? What is that which secures, so to say, us from temptation? And so again, we can go through the subtone with that view, where she says, well, what is it that makes us secure? And it shows us what? In the subtone of mind, it says, it is the willingness to learn. First, to learn that there is no discount in the law of justice. And therefore that we are willing to pay the price. Already this resolution in oneself to say, all right, I'm willing to pay the price. Whatever it may cost, I'm going to pay. Already that is the basis of true reformation. On that basis, something can grow. And so, the subtone of spirit says, what helps us to make a Christian is to be willing to be satisfied with receiving that blessing which is right according to our day, which is not demanding more than what we need, not demanding something which we don't need, but to be quite happy and feeling very blessed with the law, with the ordered blessing of soul and spirit, which blesses us according to what we now and at every stage of progress, and every moment of progress, we need, and to be glad about it and happy about it. That helps us to reform, become quite a new nature. And so in the subtone of soul, she says, it must be the willingness to work with God and to seek the destruction of all evil. It's only a willingness first and a seeking the whole destruction of sin. And it is a big preparation. In the whole chapter on prayer, it's all a big preparation, of all a big preparation. It's only that, a big preparation, so that Atonement Eucharist can come in and say, now, pay the price. But in order to pay the price, the whole chapter on prayer comes first and says, and wakes us up and says, are you willing to pay the price? Are you willing to destroy all evil works? Or do you want only the destruction of some evil works? Those evil works which you don't like, and leave those which you like. And so it's a big preparation which says, are you willing to work with God so as to destroy all evil works? Then in principle, it's the question, are we willing to seek pardon alone by improving our talents beyond reproach? Or are we seeking pardon through another way? And so it is that which makes us a Christian, if we have the resolution in ourselves, if we resolve, no, that's not the right word, if we make up our minds to be willing to solve that, to get pardon only through doing the right things, then in the subtone of life, it is what makes us a Christian is the willingness to do the right work until every belief in material life and sin is destroyed. You see, in life we always get the habitual doing of what has been presented before. It's to make it permanent and eternal and to make it work in every detail. Not in some details, but in every detail. And so it is, in truth, that which makes us Christians is the willingness in ourselves to uncover and to rebuke sin in us and in others so as to deprive material sense of its false claim. Must first be the willingness to say, all right, I want to have a good go at sin and rebuke and uncover sin before I have health. And in the last tone of love, it is the willingness to work out the solution only through spiritual sense and Christian sentiment and sober resolve. It's a very important decision and strictness of soul as love, which says, have your reformation to become a Christian, but only on the ground of spiritual sense, of spiritual Christian sentiment and sober resolve and wholesome perception of God's requirement. On that ground, really, we can only have the fulfillment of reformation. Well, that's another quickie, as Johnny Morgan said so nicely. Now let's go on finally to principle. So the new tone of principle, there's a fourth prayer. And the fourth prayer sets in a very interesting way. It says, right at the beginning, the danger from prayer is that it may lead us into temptation. By it we may become involuntary hypocrites. I think these two sentences just pinpoint the whole fourth prayer. It says there is a danger in prayer. We, or in the usual course of events, people think prayer is always good, and if I can't fail if I pray, I can't make the situation worse anyway, if not better, if I pray. But here Mrs. Eddy comes at the right at the beginning of the fourth prayer and says, now there is some danger in praying. And therefore we have to be clear in our mind what these dangers may be. Why is it that prayer should lead us into temptation? While we always think that prayer leads us out of temptation. And so we ask ourselves what it is that should make prayer the very opposite, really, of what we expected prayer to be. Now, what is the answer? Why should prayer be a danger? Or in what lies the danger? Well, the answer to it, you may be astonished what I say, but I'm going to show it through every subtone. The answer which she gives really is that the danger lies in this, that we don't see that the first three prayers are one prayer. Now, I'm going to show that to you, that the big danger, or that we are in danger in our prayer as long as we don't see that the prayer of mind and the prayer of spirit and the prayer of soul must be considered as one prayer. That unless we don't see these first three prayers as one prayer, that there is something lacking, and therefore that it is a danger to us. Now, this is not so strange. The moment I take as an illustration the fourth day of creation. Because in the fourth day of creation, we see that very clearly the symbolism of the fourth day of creation does bring us nothing new, but what it does, it takes the symbolism of the first day, the light, and the second day, the firmament, and the third day of the earth, and brings those three symbols into relationship to each other. That's what the fourth day does. The fourth day is now the day of principle, or of system, or of relationship, whatever we may call it, which says, I bring the symbols, or the meaning, or the ideas of the first, and second, and third day into one system, into one relationship, into oneness. That's what principle always does. You know, it's quite interesting that so sometimes when somebody says to me, well, I'm going to work out this problem on the principle base, on the base of principle, I just take the standpoint of principle. And then perhaps I may ask this person and say, yes, that's fine. What do you understand under the term principle? And so perhaps I get the answer and say, well, principle is absolute, principle is system, principle is harmony, principle is spiritual power, principle is system. And then I feel that this person has not understood principle. Because what she says is not, what this person would say is nothing else than giving some characteristics of principle. But principle is God, and only God. And principle is mind, and is spirit, and soul in one, expressing itself as oneness in life, truth, and love. That's the principle. So I can't work out something on the basis of principle if I just try to work it out on the question of a few ideas of principle, because principle is mind, and is spirit, and is soul. And unless I don't have these in one, I don't have a standpoint of principle. Unless that is not clearly established in consciousness, I take a worldly standpoint of principle with some terms learned by heart. The principle expresses itself as system and as spiritual power and so on. But principle is God, and principle is mind and spirit and soul related as one, and therefore as this one, always producing itself infinitely as life and as truth and as love to every human situation. Well, here, so what she says here and what we will see, and which I want to point out time and time again, that is that if we start with this fourth prayer of principle, we are in danger. The danger from prayer is that it may lead us into temptation. It may lead us into temptation because we think we can start with a principled attitude, whereas we can only start with mind and spirit and soul to get the principal attitude. Then that principal attitude has the power of principle, is one with principle, and therefore it has spiritual power, and therefore it is absolute, and therefore then it is demonstrating itself as life and truth and of love. The fourth day of creation shows us that very nicely. It says what the fourth day does is to bring the ideas and the symbols of the first and second and third day into oneness, into relationship, into system, and in a system which is absolute. So we must see that we always are very clear that the moment we try to take a principled attitude, that we are very clear that this principled attitude is really an attitude of mind, spirit, and soul as one attitude, or it isn't principled. Because mind, the attitude of mind and spirit and soul together is our basic fundamental principle, which then expresses itself as its nature, as its principled nature, essence, as life, truth, and love. I always find it very, very helpful in such discussions to go back to the Bible, because the Bible always tells us stories, which makes things very plain to us. In this case, I am reminded very much of Joseph. He always had wonderful dreams about principle. And here, one of these dreams, you remember, was when he was imprisoned in Egypt, and when the chief baker and the chief butler, had each one a dream. And those dreams were in one way rather similar, because it had to do with the three. You remember how the chief butler had a dream that he saw a vine with three branches, one vine with three branches, and that he saw how this vine with three branches was budding and bringing forth grapes and ripe grapes, and as he was going to squeeze them and squeeze them into the cup of Pharaoh, and that afterwards this chief butler was established into his rightful place. On the other side, we had the dream which Joseph had of the chief baker. He too had a three. He had three baskets on his head with baked meat in it, and they were three baskets, one on top of the other, and he saw how the birds of the air were picking out those baked meat, and the end of it was that he was hanged. His concept of the three were fatal, whereas the chief butler's concept of one were life. It established him and brought him life. Here she says in the fourth prayer, she begins with it and says that a false sense of prayer here can be fatal. It can make us a hypocrite, and hypocrisy is fatal to religion. So we have to see which standpoint which interpretation we take, the one of the chief butler or of the chief baker. Well, what was the difference? The difference was that the chief butler saw that the three branches came out of one root. There was one vine, but it had three branches. And he saw that the one principle is the root of mind, spirit, soul. And as he saw that was one, that it was one vine, then it began to bud and to give ripe grapes, and what he was doing was that he took the standpoint of life, of squeezing those grapes and squeezing them, of going back to those one root, of going back to that threefold one root, if I may call that so, and taking from it, and taking from it, and squeezing it, and always going back to the one threefold root, and squeezing it, and that squeezing it into the Pharaoh's cup, feeding rightly, and that established him again. Whereas the chief baker, he had three baskets, one on top of the other. He had three compartments of mind, spirit, soul, and they were not united into one. And as long as we don't see mind, spirit, soul as one, as our one attitude, as our whole one principled attitude, then the fowls of the earth just can pick out whatever they like, detached ideas, isolated ideas. They are not combined into one coherent system, and so it is fatal. We get hanged. That's the temptation that comes. Well, that's the point where we must see that it is not enough to have the three. Both had three branches and three baskets. But in one case, the chief butler could see that it must, that the three branches have one root, that they are united in one principle, and that was his safety. Whereas the chief baker couldn't see that. For him, mind was one compartment, spirit was one compartment, soul was one compartment, and he could pick out of everyone a little bit just according as he liked it and as he thought he would like it. And so the birds of the air just robbed him and robbed him and robbed him until it became fatal, until there was the emptiness and not the fullness of life. It was fatal. Now, this is here the big tone, which goes right through every subtone, where she tries to show how a prayer, a principled prayer, must always be a prayer which combines the first three into one. Now, how can we see that? It mustn't be something learned or taught. It must be something which is inwardly conceived and understood. And so I will try to point out it through the text and through different things, again and again, this thing. Now, if we want to go to principle and understand principle, well, we can't do it otherwise than to go back to mind, spirit, and soul. What does mind say? What does the prayer of mind say? It says to me, well, I go and seek God as he is. I desire to know God as he is. That's my big wisdom and my big desire. Then the second prayer says, all right, and that which I perceive as the allness of God, that I take in into my heart. And I combine it already with the second day, with the second prayer, and I take the whole first prayer into my heart, into my valuation, into my admiration and adoration, into my worship, and it blends into the second. And as I give all my consecration and thought and energy and desire to thee, I come to the point where I say, how shall I do that day in and day out? Shall I stick to it? And so on. What shall I do if it uncovers in me a lot which isn't of that nature? And I come to the third prayer of sincerity, and where I don't mind to find out how wrong things are in me, where I begin to rebuke what is to be rebuked, and so it begins to reform, and the reform in me, and as it reforms in me into a Christian, well, what happens? Then comes the fourth. Then I come and have a feeling, well, then I'm no more my old self. Then I'm no more my old selfish personal self. Then I am a principled self, a principled attitude, really. Then I'm no more a personal self, then I have become a principled attitude, a principled standpoint. And so we can see that the fourth prayer really shows us that as I do the first prayer, and as I do the second prayer, and as I do the third prayer, I become the doing of prayer. I become a principal prayer. Or it's rather difficult to say it in words. My whole old personality becomes a new personality, in the best sense of the word. Mrs. Eddy uses the term personality also in the positive sense, not only in the negative sense. In the spiritual sense, we have to see that principle expresses itself in a spiritual personality. And as person means, as you know, personare, to sound through. See, here in the fourth prayer, We find now that in the measure as we take the first prayer as our principle, and as we take the second prayer as our principle, and take the third prayer as our principle, then these three first prayers become our principal prayer. And so they sound through every detail of us. And as we go on through the subtones, we can see that in every subtones we see that the fourth prayer is that prayer where we begin to see that the first three prayers just must sound through every detail of our personality. That it must sound through what I think and desire and speak and act and live and feel and do and act and show forth and so on. That, because principle is always that which sounds through every idea, which sounds through every detail of our life, where we begin to see that these three first prayers are prayers which have to sound through every detail of our life, that they have to sound through not only through our desire, not only through our outward expression of that desire, not only through our humility and sincerity, but that they have to sound through every phase of our being. So that every detail of our being is prayerful. And that's principle. That's the fourth prayer. That every detail of our being, of our doing, acting, seeking, speaking, feeling, living, doing, is prayerful. Is prayerish, has the nature of prayer, of the prayer of mind, spirit, soul. When that sounds through, when that has become one attitude in me, then that one attitude in me just sounds through every phase of my being. That's my true spiritual personality. That's the prayer of true personality, where everything conforms to the principle of prayer.